Fantasy Freaks and Geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. James Go here with you. Joined alongside full cast of characters, we got the franchise. Matt Franciscovich in the building. What's up, man?
What up? Doing a little better today than I was Monday morning. A little more recovered.
Oh,
I think I said I didn't want to make eye contact with anyone. I've made eye contact with other humans, so I'm good now.
Totally and utterly forgot about that. But yeah, you guys all look so much better now.
Yeah, well, couple days of rest.
So rough.
Some hydrating.
That was a rough
Sometimes it takes
days.
A week, so yeah, I give
yeah,
credit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good man, to go that's now. Great. Matt Harmon, what's up?
Hey, man, I'm good. I'm good. Good to be here. Fun show ahead.
Yeah, no doubt.
Thank God the NFL decided to give us like a little spoiler alert off season ahead. We have something big to talk about instead of just like, hey, did you guys know that the Eagles, the Patriots are playing in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And Nick Foles is the backup quarterback, but the team's still really good, and they're rallying around him. Yeah.
Oh, my God. If I have to hear about a Tom Brady dog bite story, I mean, this is truly
unreal.
I mean,
Super Bowl
unreal.
Week has jumped the shark.
I was going to say,
I tweeted that out because that email came in, and I was
Brady
like, the
build-up
to the damn Super Bowl is too long.
Unbelievable.
He got bit by the dog in training camp.
Yeah, like that would have been a huge story if like he was walking around practice up in Minnesota and a dog came up and just bit him
right
before the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I know, I love it.
And
not quite.
The story they were asking him about his entire history of dog bites. He's like, when I was a kid in Minnesota, I got bit by a dog. And it's like, good Lord, get to kickoff, please.
Yes.
Listen,
Tom Brady dog bite stories.
I mean, look, Tom Brady has a cut on his hand. I've been bitten by a dog. I feel like he's more relatable than ever.
Yeah, you know?
You know?
Exactly.
Everybody. I mean,
just like us.
Who hasn't been bitten by a dog before?
Right.
Let's talk about our history.
He's just an average Joe at the end of
You know what? Now let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Who here's been scratched by a cat? Anybody?
I have.
Who hasn't been scratched by a cat? Have you come in contact with a cat? You've been scratched by a cat.
There was another story about him chewing tobacco and throwing
up. Oh, that was good. That was the other thing. I was like, I've done that too. I mean, who hasn't done that?
What is going on?
Chewed tobacco, you've thrown up from it,
yes,
most likely.
100%. Yeah.
First time.
Or passed out.
Actually, that's funny. Can I talk about that on the show?
Can we just...
Can I talk about that? Because I remember the first time I did. I mean, I'm from Virginia, so it happened.
Right. West Virginia. Right.
Yeah, right, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, so the first time I did that, I remember like my friends were like, yeah, you know, you're probably going to throw up after this. And I was like...
Don't take a big chub.
I was like, no, I'm not. And then I did it, and then it, like... Night was over. Uh-huh. Walk into the back to my room at the end of the night. I'm like, told those idiots I wasn't gonna do it. Laid down in the bed to go to sleep.
Yeah, you're done.
Room spinning. Got up. Throw up.
Yep.
So me and Tom Brady, really, hey. I feel this is a good moment for him. He's so much more relatable than ever.
And you've beaten time. He's beaten time.
I don't know if I've beaten time.
Oh.
Tom's still versing time.
Yeah, he's.
He's still
Tom versus time.
He's dueling.
The game's not over.
Oh, I was told it was over.
No.
I was told he beat time.
Not yet.
I see.
It's still
an ongoing battle.
We'll Titanic forces.
You'll have to tune into the Super Bowl to really.
You'll have to tune in.
Yeah.
Tune into his Facebook show.
Right. This kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gilhar. What's up, man?
I don't know. What a swerve this podcast started.
I love it. This is why I love this group of guys. It's like just a whirl. Like we're like whirlwind. There it goes. Boom. The whole thing's
we're
gone.
Like, wow, we actually have something to talk about. Now we're talking about dog bites and dipping and like.
Yep, exactly.
It's beautiful.
Producer Chris, what's up?
Wow.
Oh, buddy. Thursday morning.
Oh,
James,
God.
Can I tell you a couple days ago when this Redskins trade went down? I'm from D.C., right?
Yeah.
So I was off Twitter. My phone blew up because all of my best friends are Redskins fans. And the range of emotions from those 3 hours from when it was announced to when it was revealed that they gave up Kendall Fuller, it was extreme. Like, Redskins fans were not very happy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So, you know, you obviously are parting ways with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And then they bring in Alex Smith. What are the fans – I mean, are the fans happy with it or are they not happy
Should we,
with
like,
it
break or? The news first?
Yeah, I was going to say we're kind of burying the lead
I
here.
Mean, I think if you're listening to the fantasy podcast in the offseason, I imagine
I don't know. I mean, this might be some of our listeners' only source of news.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it is, it's sad. But no, what was the fan reaction?
I think at first, Smith and Cousins, you could argue that they're comparable. 4 years older, Alex Smith is 4 years older
That's
than
right.
Cousins. But the compensatory pick that the Redskins are getting for Kirk Cousins leaving, I think people are forgetting about, because that third round pick they gave up is almost a wash. So you essentially traded Kendall Fuller for Alex Smith, knowing that Kirk's out the door.
Yeah.
But Kendall Fuller's a good player.
I see what you're saying.
And Bashaud Breeland's a free agent. So really, if you don't re-sign Breeland, you lose Fuller, who's a really young player. And Scott McLuhan came out and said he would have never traded him.
Yeah.
And then you got Josh Norman and nobody else, really. So I think what it does, it allows them to actually team build a little bit more now, because you do have a little bit more cap space this year, especially because what you would have paid Kirk this year versus what you're paying Alex Smith this year, you have more room to build the team.
Yep.
But wide-ranging emotions, I think people are just – they're at least happy that the Kirk Cousins saga
is over.
It's over, yeah.
That's a very good point. We will dive deep into this story, into that trade. We'll talk about it from a real-life perspective. We'll talk about it from a fantasy perspective. We'll break down some contract numbers for – I mean, we're going to dive deep into it, because what the hell? Why the hell not? It's the offseason, and this is the biggest story by far that has happened over the last couple of days. We'll give you a Super Bowl matchup preview as well. We'll talk about some interesting matchups that are going to be happening here on Sunday on Super Bowl. Gronk versus Malcolm Jenkins, possibly. Maybe. Is it Brandon Cooks versus Ronald Darby? A lot of interesting matchups, certainly, in this ball game. And we'll talk about some of the more interesting ones coming up later in the show. And we'll close out with a round of daily daps. But we start your show, as we always do, with your top fantasy headlines.
Oh, my God, the news!
Yes.
News.
It's lit.
All right, it was a blockbuster. Pro Bowl quarterback Alex Smith got shipped off to Washington. KC got a third-round pick and a rising slot corner in Kendall Fuller in return, at least reportedly, right? We talked to the man who broke the story, Therese Paylor from the Kansas City Star. Therese, we welcome you into the Fantasy Podcast. What's up, man? How you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. So we've had a couple days now to digest the trade. Can you fill us in on some, I don't know, some details regarding, you know, why Alex Smith got shipped out at this time to Washington?
Yeah, the Chiefs needed to get a longer look at Patrick Mahomes. They've got to decide on his fifth-year option in a couple seasons, and you'd rather decide on that with 2 years of playing time under his belt opposed from one, because that number's sky high for the fifth-year option. You know, also, you want to try to follow the Russell Wilson Seahawks model, where you got a great quarterback on a cheap rookie deal, you know, for a couple seasons. And during that time, you just fortify the roster at multiple positions. It's a really good formula if you can find the right quarterback, and the Chiefs believe that they've got it. And also, there's a need to fortify a lot of spots on the team, specifically on the defense, with a chance to get a third-round pick, which is a top 100 pick. Those are very valuable. And an up-and-coming young cornerback that these guys love. It was just too good to pass up.
All right, there you go. Can you give us a few more details? How did the trade go down, man? I mean, this is a big name. It's a big blockbuster trade. How did the trade happen?
Well, the Senior Bowl is a pretty good time for teams and to discuss different concepts of trade options. And I think the Chiefs had multiple offers. I think that the starting point was a second-round pick, which is fair. And Washington topped all the offers by throwing in Fuller, who's a player the Chiefs really like and is a plug-and-play guy. And by giving them a third, I mean, Washington really stepped to the plate. And, again, the Chiefs just felt like they couldn't pass this up.
It's a controversial move, right? I mean, we're talking about a guy that was highly successful in Kansas City and Alex Smith. They just went to the playoffs. I mean, I get that they suffered a very tough playoff loss, but this is a move that sometimes can lose a locker room. How much uncertainty or angst is there among players from what you can tell right now?
I think there's an understanding of why it happened, and it's possible to have that understanding while still, like, you know, feeling bad for Alex or wishing the best for the guy, because there's not anybody in that room that doesn't love that guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, those two things are not mutually exclusive. I think players can come to understand that this is the best business decision for the team, while also appreciating everything Alex did. And also, look, it doesn't hurt. Mahomes is good, man. Like, he was really impressive in the regular season finale. So, you know, it's going to be his team, and he's just a kid, and he's going to have to continue to grow up in that way. But as a football player, things this guy can do on the field, it's pretty tempting and tantalizing.
Yeah, Therese, I actually wanted to ask about that because you mentioned the Russell Wilson plan, and I love the model, obviously, in theory of doing that, but the Chiefs obviously have to have seen something from Mahomes, not just in his college film for them to draft him, but also this year, this past season. Like, what has given them the – what have they seen, you know, behind the scenes? What have you seen behind the scenes kind of to give you – or give them the confidence to make this move?
Yeah, the ability to throw people open consistently to make – pulling plays out of his tail and make difficult throws that frustrate the defense. That's the hardest. You can't teach that, and that's not defensible. You know what I mean? The defenses can't counter that. So, you know, what he needed to learn are the basics of the West Coast scheme, and that just takes time. So, you know, I think that they feel he's gotten that time. He'll have some growing pains this year, but, you know, the things this guy can do, man, just they feel like it's worth the risk. And most of the people here do too, fans. And I'm sure players understand as well.
All right. Have you talked to any players that maybe, you know, not giving any names here, but maybe were, you know, diametrically opposed to the trade?
Not diametrically opposed, but Travis Kelce yesterday was pretty honest that he wishes he had another year with Alex to see what they could have done. At the same time, he says he still loves Patrick Mahomes. So also, like, Derek Johnson, Tom Bahala, a lot of veterans. Because they understand that if you go with a young quarterback, you're probably not going to, like, win the Super Bowl this year, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of lengthens the Super Bowl window a little bit. So, yeah, like a little – I think the veterans are probably just like, man. But they also understand it, and I expect guys to be good soldiers, including Kelce. Yeah, Kelce's numbers might go up with Mahomes because Mahomes' ability to extend plays and Kelce's inherent ability to make plays sounds like, you know, he could be up for a big season.
Yeah, there any other players that kind of come to mind? You know, the Chiefs obviously have a ton of explosive talent. Alex Smith had a career year in terms of deep passing and everything like that, but he's known as more of a conservative passer. Are there any other guys besides Kelce that could kind of see their numbers increase or opportunities go up with Mahomes?
Yep. Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill, deep ball threat. Him, Mahomes to that guy. I mean, the ball might travel 60 yards in the air on their ball, you know. Like, you could just literally go play pitch and catch because no one can run with Ty Hill. And if you don't give him help over the top, he's going to run past anybody. So I think this is also going to have a really positive effect on the running game because, you know, Pat has the ability to reach every level of the field, and that changes the way defenses can play you. I don't think teams are going to be loading up the box as much, which is going to help the running game. Honestly, this is a fantasy show, right? So,
yeah.
Like, if I'm in a destiny, like a fantasy, like, you know,
dynasty.
What is that? The dynasty league. I'm taking Mahomes.
Nice.
I feel good about that. I'm also in on the Chiefs offense for the foreseeable future.
There you go.
I saw enough about Mahomes to think that, you know, if you can get this guy cheap somehow, I don't know if that's possible. I'm not in a dynasty. I don't know, but like, if you can pick him up, do it, and know that a rising tide can float all boats. So know that that's going to help Kareem Hunt. Know that that'll help Spencer Ware. Know that that'll help Ty Hill. Know that that can help Travis Kelce. You know, this offense can really go to the next level if Patrick Mahomes is as good as these guys talk about him as and as what I've seen. So I would not be afraid straight up to bet on Pat Mahomes. Okay.
Hey. Can you speak to what Alex Smith is feeling right now? I don't know if you've had a chance to reach out to him, but is he excited? Is he disappointed? How do you think Alex Smith is handling it?
Yeah, you know, I think $71 million goes a long way for
him. That's a good point. That's a very
and
good
also
point.
Like Washington, they have a pretty QB friendly system.
Yeah,
Jay Gruden's a good coach, man. So like, it's not like he's going to the dregs in the NFL.
Yeah,
you know. So I think he's okay with it. I think he wants to stay. He told me he'd rather stay, but you know, as far as Alex goes, Alex is just fine. I think at the end of the day, he will have made nearly $170 million in the NFL or something.
Not bad.
I think he's okay. I know he wants the Super Bowl though.
Right.
And you know, Washington's a little different as far as like organization-wise, how to handle business than the Chiefs are, but all things considered, like, that's not like a bad situation for him at all.
That's a good point. Hey, you mentioned Spencer Ware. That's a name I almost completely forgot regarding Kansas City. How's his recovery coming?
I think he's going to be okay, and I think he's going to be a really good match with Kareem Hunt. I am one. I think like the running game is going to improve next year. I do wonder if like the return of Spencer are cutting to Kareem's workload a bit. Kareem is amazing, though. That's not a slight on him, but like he shouldn't have carried the workload he did. I mean, ideally, you know, Spencer Ware gets some of those touches and Sharkhandrick too. You know, and that allows. You know, I know Hunt wants to get in a rhythm, but when in the middle of the season, in the dog days of the season, someone like Ware would have been helpful. So
it's true.
I think he's helpful, and you know, I think he's somebody that could really be a great number two back, sharing that load with Kareem.
All right, last question for you, man. You're a Hall of Fame voter, right?
I am.
Hey, man, what is the deal with Terrell Owens? How is this man not in the Hall of Fame, bro?
Yeah, so I mean, I can't really talk about what happens in the room where this is where they discuss this, but what I can say is that I voted for him, so I, you know, I'm not really gonna go ahead like defending that because I don't agree. Like I voted for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say this too. Like you guys don't like know what's said in there. Like,
I'm sure.
These are 48 selectors who are well sourced throughout the league who know stuff about guys. Right. And like, I'm just saying, like, we discuss everything about a player in that room. Okay. And it's not like we're saying he's not going to get in the Hall of Fame. Terrell Owens is going to get in the Hall of Fame one day.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to happen. But like, everybody wants to say, how could this guy not get in this year? How could this guy not get in? Guys, we can only vote in 5 guys. And there's like 40 guys that are eligible right now that deserve to get in.
I got
maybe
you,
not
yeah.
40, but 30 or 25, whatever. It's still a lot that deserve to get in. So somebody's going to feel slighted every year. And I'll also tell you this, okay? I know Terrell Owens had a great career statistically, okay? Michael Irvin had to wait. Okay?
True.
Yeah.
Michael Irvin won 3 Super Bowls. Chris Carter had to wait. Receivers generally have to wait because typically, like, to balance out the class, you vote one guy in – one guy at a position because it's only 5. It's not like if they upped it to 7 per year, yeah. But like it's only 5, so you typically go one guy per position. There's a backlog of safeties that haven't got in. There's a backlog of offensive linemen that haven't gotten in. Like, okay, let me ask you this, James.
Yeah.
Is John Lynch a Hall of Famer?
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Is Brian Dawkins a Hall of Famer?
Oh, for sure, 100%.
How about Steve Hutchinson?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, he's one of the best offensive linemen ever.
That's right. How about Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis? Listen, that's 9 guys, and that means Randy Moss, okay? That's 10 guys. 5 of them aren't getting in this year. So I get a little fired up about it because I
– Hell yeah, you do. I love it.
It's great.
I used to think the same way until I actually got in the room and I saw, like, how it happens. Like, you just got to understand, these are the most well-sourced and, like, smartest and most not smartest, but you know, these are some of the most well-sourced and like
experienced,
you know, football experience and like football. Yeah. These guys all love football in that room. No one's trying to embarrass the game. We're all trying to make the best decision, you know, because we take the responsibility seriously. So yeah, I voted for Terrell Owens, but if somebody else didn't, you know,
I
do understand why. Yeah. You got to just respect people's opinion. He will get in.
There you go.
Okay, just don't get on, don't rag guys for not putting guys in on your timeline.
There you
understand?
Go. It's Terrez Paylor from the Kansas City Star. Man, I did not know you were going to get that fired up about
that
this. This was a throwaway question.
Was
this was the best part of the interview, man.
I know. I get that question a lot, though. It's just like, we're gonna, guys, don't put him in.
There you
I
go.
Need other people to vote with me. But he's going to get in. Just it takes time. Like, here's one thing. You know,
yeah.
We put in 2 receivers this year, and that means that somebody at another position, there's at least only 3 other spots, okay? And I just named all those. Ray Lewis is getting in, right?
Right, right.
Now it's 2 other spots. Now what? We're going to put a lineman in? How about one of them safeties? And by the way, Ed Reed is coming up soon.
Yeah.
He's a lock guy.
Oh, locked up, yeah,
John
for
Lynch
sure.
is coming up soon. Actually, no. Polamalu's a lock guy. So what are we doing with Dawkins? What are we doing with Lynch? You know, there's a guy like Steve Atwater who's still out there, you know?
Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame.
So, that's what I'm saying. There's just not enough spots.
Yeah.
You guys just got to be patient. You got to understand. Terrell Owens is still a young man.
True.
He will have his day.
True. There it is.
Maybe it's this year. We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see. It's Terrez.
That's so great.
It's Terrez Paylor from the Kansas City Star. Hey, Terrez, tell people how to find you, man.
Yeah, on KansasCity.com and then on Twitter at Terrez Paylor. It's TerezPaylor.
There it is. And he's a great follow. If you want Kansas City Chiefs information this is your guy. Therese Paylor from the KC Star. We appreciate your time, man.
All right, have a good one.
See ya. Man.
Woo.
That was fun.
Therese was, he was fired up on that Hall of Fame question, yeah, bro. Yeah.
Brought a little heat.
He yeah, did. Awesome. I love it.
Hey, he's got it. Whoa, my headset's coming off. He's got a good point, though, about, like, we get, I mean, everybody has, we're in the age of outrage. Everybody has to be.
Age of outrage.
Everybody
yes.
has to be upset about something. And
is that
definitely,
your memoir title?
Yes, The Age of Outrage.
It's a pretty good title.
It actually is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that won't be my memoir. That will be like my historical look back of this era in time for sure.
Okay.
But anyways, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah.
Hall of Fame.
So he has a great point, though, about like, I mean, everybody gets outraged about how Terrell Owens not being in the Hall of Fame. But then like when he brought up the point about Michael Irvin having to wait and all these guys, it's like, yeah, once he's in the Hall of Fame, nobody's going to look back and be like, but remember how long it took him to get in? And like nobody ever, we always talk about like he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but nobody ever actually ends up remembering. Like
yeah.
there's no like official designation.
There's no gold club of,
well, you get like, yeah, you get the gold jacket, but you also get the silver star if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer. And the rest of you peasants.
You know what though? They should. There should be a delineate, like there should be, I get that there's the Hall of Fame, you know, but like they should have like the Ring of Honor, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like
first tier Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Hall of Fame.
You know what I mean?
That would be so stupid.
Yeah, it'd be so awful for those guys.
But that was great though. I was happy to see him get very emotional about that. That was awesome.
He gave us some really, really good information regarding Kansas City as well, the Chiefs. And again, I really do mean it. If you are not following him for KC Chiefs news, you're doing it wrong. This guy's a great source for Chiefs news. He's pretty active on Twitter as well, so follow him on Twitter, no doubt about it. All right, but let's talk about it from a fantasy perspective. All right, so he's talking about Mahomes being a dynamic player, Alex Gilhar, talking about how this is a guy that could really lift the offense here. Do you agree with that assessment?
I mean, he's certainly a more explosive athlete and has that, you know, howitzer arm. We've seen it, and he can make it from, you know, awkward platforms. He can make deep, outrageous throws on the run. It's just going to be a case of whether or not this offense all gels underneath him and how he assumes that role as a starter. There could be some bumps and bruises. There could be, I mean, you know, Alex Smith is a guy that was only ever throwing like 5 to 9 interceptions a year with Kansas City because he wasn't taking those chances. So with Mahomes, I mean, one of his nicknames is a gunslinger. So yeah. Like, if he's taking those chances, how many are going to break right for the Chiefs and fantasy owners, and how many are going to go the opposite direction and take the offense off the field?
I mean, I think in standard redraft, Mahomes is not going to be a player that a lot of folks really draft. Maybe maybe in deeper leagues, you're looking at him as drafting him as a potential backup or just a guy that you're circling on the waiver wire or whatever it is.
Depends on the hype machine too. Like,
yeah.
And throughout the offseason, like, well, I mean, people are already really excited.
Therese got it going.
People,
I'm like, I'm putting in offers in my dynasty leagues right now.
Right now,
from that interview.
He was really, yeah, that was good to hear too. Ooh. Because I mean, he's obviously embedded with the team all the time, and just the fact like. Even before I asked the question about, like, what have they seen, they were like, yeah, I mean, then this is about Pat Mahomes. They believe Pat Mahomes can elevate, you know, as you said, like, raise all tides. And at least the good thing about the Chiefs offense is we know who's going to get fed. Like, with here, you mentioned Kareem Hunt, like, maybe getting less of a workload. We'll see. Like, he handled 62% of the backfield carries last year. Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, they absorbed 43% of the combined pass attempts. Like, the ball is going to go to those guys.
I mean, I guess that would be my question, too, you know, is that can we rely on that with a new quarterback as well?
Yes, that's I have a concern. Like, I'm a Travis Kelce owner, I think, in two dynasty leagues. And Therese was like, his numbers might go up. I mean, he's had 1,000 yards each of the last two seasons. He had 8 touchdowns last year. So for a tight end, for those numbers to go up for a tight end, that would be
That'd be pretty tough.
That would be insane.
Yeah, it'd be pretty tough.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty tough.
Right. So maybe it takes a year or two to get there, but
I
there's going to be some growing
pains,
I think.
Fascinated by the Spencer Ware thing, too.
Yeah.
Because Paylor seemed to be pretty high on Spencer Ware. And again, you mentioned the fact that he's embedded with the team. I imagine he's got some inkling that this team would like to use Spencer Ware when he returns from injury as well.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about the running back position. I mean, I remember having kind of the same feeling about when Melvin Gordon had his big breakout year. Like, he would that season would probably never have happened the way it happened if Danny Woodhead didn't get hurt.
Yeah.
And
right.
probably Kareem Hunt's rookie year, if Spencer Ware had – I mean, I think Kareem Hunt was probably going to take the backfield over at least as the lead back in the committee, but, like, probably never was going to happen that way if Spencer Ware didn't get hurt in the preseason.
Although he brought up a great point, which is the fact that he's found some, you know, midseason troubles there, and a lot of rookies will hit the, you know, the proverbial rookie wall at various points in the season. It almost, he didn't necessarily say it, but it almost seemed as if Torres was saying, hey, listen, if they had, you know, worked him in a little bit slower, then maybe he wouldn't have seen that midseason slide the way that we, you know, saw it obviously unfold in 2017.
Right.
All right, so going back to the other side, Alex Smith now reportedly will sign a four-year extension worth $94 million with, I mean, just $71 million in guarantees in 4 years is just – that's bananas,
man. Hot cash.
That is crazy. Smith is now under contract for 5 years at $111 million per. He is currently 33 years old. So by the time this contract is over, theoretically, I doubt he'll get to the last year, but whatever. He'll be 38 by the time this contract is theoretically up. On the other side, the trade obviously means that Kirk Cousins won't be re-signed by Washington. He's a free agent, and there's wide speculation that he lands in Denver, although Arizona is also in the mix.
As are the Jets.
As are the Jets.
As are possibly the Jags.
Yeah.
Probably not. But
probably not.
Damn.
But the Jets have an interesting tie-in as well, which we'll get to. But what do you guys feel about with Kirk Cousins? You know, if he, again, our own Chris Wessling also postulates that Denver would be the right spot and the lead candidate now to garner the services of Kirk Cousins. Frances, what are your thoughts on him potentially going there to Mile High?
I think it'd be refreshing. We've kind of suffered through two seasons of the Broncos quarterbacks, like, just being terrible and boring.
Refreshing is a great word for it.
Yeah, like, Denver needs – they obviously need their quarterback. They have two good wide receivers there. You know, C.J. Anderson, they have kind of a depth in the backfield. The defense kind of fell off this year. But that also goes hand-in-hand with the quarterback play. And they were rotating three quarterbacks all season.
It was
like,
bad.
They need the help. I would love to see him land in Denver. I think that'd be great.
It's the one situation, though, Gilhar, where I felt like maybe possibly they were a quarterback away this year.
Right.
But going into 2018, I don't think they're a quarterback away. I think they have so many needs.
Denver?
Yeah.
I mean, they have some other holes to fill, but they've still got a lot of pieces on defense. Their defense was banged up along the defensive line last year. A lot was put on Von Miller. So if those guys are healthy again, and if they're not on the field for, you know,
that's true,
45 minutes of a 60-minute game because their offense can't move the football or, you know, put points on the board, that's going to help as well. I like Denver as a fit fantasy-wise for Kirk Cousins because I think that raises up Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders again. Like, they were such floor plays for the last couple years, and having Cousins there could help them hit their ceilings again.
I'm worried about DT, man.
Here's the catch, though, with him going to Denver. You know, we talk about all this other talent they've got on the defense with these two receivers, but there's already talk that if they give Kirk Cousins the big fat contract that they're going to have to cut some people. And one of them, if not both of them, might be these two receivers. They combine for $20.8 million in the cap. I think it's $8 million for Sanders and about $12 million for Demaryius Thomas. So that could be kind of the catch, is that in order to upgrade the quarterback position, they're going to have to jettison one of these two receivers. And that would immediately, the landing spot suddenly looks less appealing.
Oh, certainly.
Then they've got to bring, you know, maybe they re-sign Cody Latimer to a cheap free agent deal. They have Carlos Henderson waiting in the wings as a third-round pick who didn't see any time his rookie year. So then they suddenly become a far less interesting offense. And C.J. Anderson is a candidate to get cut as well, even though he had a career year.
Yeah, I think he is a candidate. I would be actually surprised if he was on the roster next year, but because, again, they do have depth at that position
right
as well. You talk about Demaryius Thomas. I do wonder as well if he's a cut candidate, considering, again, you talk about his cap hit being $12 million next year. Dead cap is $4.4 million. If you're saving, you know, near $8 million in the cap, and again, we've seen a decline in play, I think, from Demaryius Thomas over the last couple of seasons. So,
but
I think
doesn't that go hand in hand with the decline in play of the quarterbacks?
Is it, though? Because I tell you what, man, just out on the field, he just doesn't look like that guy.
Right.
Yeah, he
had like that hip injury. And
I think the hip injury is why we've seen the decline, but
right.
That's not an injury that goes away. You know what I mean? And he's been bothered by it for the last three seasons now.
He doesn't put up the same numbers, and I agree with you. He's definitely a declining player, but I almost like want to give him some credit for maintaining like different skills than what he had when Peyton Manning was there when he was also – like, Manning was there and he was also this outrageous athlete that they could just get the ball in space. He'd make great plays right after the catch. The hip injury combined with age, he's no longer that guy. But
yeah,
he's become – something he wasn't really great at despite his big frame was, like, winning contested catches and winning in tight coverage. I think he's gotten much better at that phase of the game. So he's okay, definitely no longer, like, an explosive number one receiver. But I think he's a pretty solid possession guy. You know, it's almost a credit to him. He's not one of these players like Dez Bryant that hasn't really adjusted.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, he has not really adjusted to the fact that his skill set has changed. Thomas is doing that. Meanwhile, yeah, some of these other veterans are taking a little while.
I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. I could be wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kirk Cousins took less money to go to Denver.
Because he's made so much.
Well, that, and I think he wants stability, and I think he wants to win.
Yeah.
And I think you see the blueprint around the league, especially with guys like Tom Brady, who have taken less money to actually build a team around him. He could not build a team in Washington, and I don't know if he really wanted to be there anyway. Mm-hmm. So if you go to Denver, I could see Elway convincing him, hey, take a little bit of a discount here so we can keep
or
some pieces
come
around
take
you.
An incentive-based contract.
Or an incentive-based contract.
You
exactly
hit yardages, you get us to the playoffs, you hit X yeah amount of touchdowns, and you will get paid.
It sounds like he wants to go to like a first-class organization with a chance to win and a history of winning. And yeah, I think
Denver
checks all those
yeah
boxes.
Oh, yeah, no yeah doubt about it. All right, so we talk about Alex Smith there in Washington. Kirk Cousins potentially being there in Denver, but there are certainly some other landing spots. Arizona, obviously, with Carson Palmer retiring. I did want to share this note from Washington Post Mike Jones, who noted on Twitter, Kirk Cousins...
He doesn't work for the Washington Post anymore.
Oh, he doesn't?
USA Today writer now.
USA yes Today, I'm
but
sorry.
But long-time Washington Post guy.
There you go. Mike Jones, who covers the Redskins. Kirk Cousins, in 2015, asked for a four-year deal, $19 million per, with $44 million guaranteed. By franchising Cousins 2 years in a row... by the way, Washington decided not to give him that deal, but it didn't matter because by franchising Cousins 2 years in a row, they gave him $44 million guaranteed anyway, and now Washington is paying Alex Smith $22 million per year instead of $19 million per year and giving Alex Smith an additional $71 million in guarantees on
this,
top of the 44 there.
This just exemplifies why this front office has not exactly been the poster child for function in,
yes,
in how to manage contracts, among other things. Sorry, Chris, I know you're a fan of the team.
I know.
But as a fan, you also probably know that the Washington front office has bungled a few things
yeah
in recent history.
This isn't just one example here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Many, 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 many. But that whole situation exemplifies it.
The good note too that I saw was that you know, I think if you look at this trade in a vacuum, I like the trade for Washington. I think they made the good move here. But if you look at it overall, and you lay out those numbers, you could not have bungled this
yeah
harder than
yeah
than what Washington. It's just so bad.
And while that's true, like they definitely bungled this, it's like. I wrote about this in my reaction piece to this story. Like,
read it at NFL.com/Harmon.
Hey!
Yes, you could do that if you so choose. And like the one thing that I think is important to note here is that like you can't judge of like, all right, fine, they have Alex Smith as their quarterback. Like, that's a big downgrade from Kirk Cousins. Like, it absolutely is. But this situation, this trade has made it abundantly clear like he was never coming back. Those ties were severed long ago.
That's a good point.
And so you almost like have to judge, all right, what's Washington's offense going to look like now with Alex Smith as opposed to some, like, C-level free agent or some rookie quarterback or, God forbid, Colt McCoy? Like, these were our options looking at it before Alex Smith.
Point.
So it's almost like,
it's a good point.
Shoot, I mean, they paid Alex Smith a lot of money, but that's a lot better than
yeah
the alternative.
And like I said, in a vacuum, this yes one individual move, I think it's a good move. I think it's a smart
yeah
move, but it's just – it's just what you're,
absolutely.
You wonder how this Lord is going to affect the NFL draft, though, and the quarterbacks, because you would think
you're
the
right
Redskins would have drafted a quarterback in the
you're
first
right
round. That's out the window now.
Right.
You have to team build. You have to get some other positions on defense or running back.
You know what, though? It would be so Alex Smith if they drafted,
Josh Allen or somebody.
I was going to say, I mean, you're talking about him playing out the life of his contract. Like, there will be a Pat Mahomes in Washington,
oh,
just like
no
there was a Pat Mahomes in Colin Kaepernick in
yeah,
that's what
he's
saying.
He's coming.
He's coming.
It's
in a
not
couple
this
years
year, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Not this year, oh, but in a couple years, he'll be there. Don't worry.
Can you imagine? Oh, my goodness. That would be so Alex Smith. I would feel so bad for him. Let's talk about, you know, Alex Smith in Washington from an offensive standpoint for a little bit. All right. So Cousins did like to spread it around. I don't know if it was Cousins or the offense, but Smith came from a system where he largely was highly concentrated mm-hmm in Kansas City. How do you see it, Matt Harmon, going in Washington with Alex Smith under center?
Yeah, he leaves one of the most like stable offensive ecosystems to like a target distribution table that's in complete transition. Because looking at, it's easy to say like, yeah, Washington definitely has a lot of weapons, but really the only established players that you can lock in being there in terms of the passing game weapons, or if you want to include Chris Thompson, but then in the receiver group, it's Josh Doctson and Jamison Crowder.
That's
Terrell,
it.
Terrell Pryor's gone.
Yep.
Everybody else is a free agent. The only other guys that are going to be on the under contract are Robert Davis, who has zero career receptions, and your boy Cal's own Maurice Harris.
That's right. There you go. Cal Harris. Let's go.
So, and when just looking at those two, like Kirk Cousins, Andy Dalton in Cincinnati, other these Jay Gruden-type quarterbacks, Alex Smith theoretically does kind of fit that same mold.
Well, it's a West Coast system, so I think that's a good fit.
It's definitely a good fit. It's same terminology. Like, he should slide right into that.
Yeah.
If there's one thing we know about Alex Smith, he does like to throw into tight – he does not like to throw into tight windows.
Right.
He was one of the lowest in next-gen stats percentage of passes into tight windows the last 2 years.
Yep.
Josh Doctson was a guy who saw 35% of his targets last year. Going into tight windows. Kirk Cousins really evolved in that sense of the game. I would think this does, you know, theoretically, again, mean good things for Jamison Crowder. But, again, they're going to draft some wide receivers. And then the tight ends, like, I know they've already seen analysis like this, just which is, to me, just, like, boring stuff. But, like, Travis Kelce did great under Alex Smith. Like, that means Jordan Reed will do great under Alex Smith. But, like, Jordan Reed carries a $10 million cap hit.
Yeah.
Will
he be on the
He
team?
Vanished from the season after six right. games with another
and
injury.
He couldn't stay healthy. Yeah.
No, exactly. I mean.
But, bro, Vernon Davis and Alex Smith played together in San Fran.
Ooh.
And reunion!
And while that's,
yeah.
well, that's also true. By yes. the way, this actually, Vernon Davis turned 34 years old yesterday.
Yeah, he played like a 24-year-old last
year.
Yeah,
this
though.
Was his.
He was outrageous.
Yeah, but he kind of faded as the season went along, and he's gonna count $5.3 million against the cap. Again, this team's going to have to squeeze a little bit now that they've brought in a big name quarterback. Like, I just think we don't really know who Alex Smith is going to be throwing the ball to at all.
Yeah. I do think, again, it's a good fit for Alex Smith, but RIP Josh Doctson, man.
I don't think it's RIP
well,
necessarily.
So now the reason I say that is because, as Matt Harmon noted, per Next Gen Stats, is that Alex Smith doesn't like to throw into tight windows, and that obviously correlates with the eyeball test as well. Josh Doctson is a guy that, if you look at the Next Gen Stats for yards of separation, he's one of the lowest in the league, averaging just 2.2 yards of separation at the time of throw. So it's a situation where Doctson is really good in contested ball situations. The only problem is Alex Smith doesn't ever throw in those tight windows.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm a little bit worried about Josh Doctson. I think that it's not a great fit in terms of quarterback wide receiver. But if there's nobody else there, there's nobody else there.
Jameson Crowder may catch 90 balls.
I think that's where it goes.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean Doctson can't still have success. I mean, you know, Alex Smith had some success with Dwayne Bowe, somewhat of a similar type of wide receiver when he first got to Kansas City. And also, like, Josh Doctson, are all those targets, how many of them were stupid fades in the end zone or just low percentage YOLO balls that were thrown up? I think in the context of Doctson playing more of a full-time role in the whole year, having a whole offseason working with Alex Smith, like, I would imagine that percentage of tight window targets goes down. And if he is the guy, Jay Gruden's going to do more things to, you know, put him in better situations to succeed.
You know what? That's
I'm with Gelhar on that
we
one.
We can't just take that number from that small sample size and immediately transpose it into next year.
It's worth noting. I think you guys are both right that on James, your point, like, I don't know why I said it, because I think it's worth noting. It's something to watch. But I'm with Gelhar in that I think it's going to be on Josh Doctson to develop more as a full-time number one wide receiver that's going to run a lot more routes, isn't just going to be needed to throw to in contested situations, which, like, it's also important to remember for Doctson last year, like, he has that trump card skill set of being a great contested catch receiver. I think he can do more. I think he showed that in college, but, like, he was kind of playing, you know, basically his first year last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, injuries sapped so much stuff out of him.
That's not right. Didn't play much in the like didn't do much training camp or any offseason activities either because he had the Achilles injury in his rookie year. So
it's funny to me though, just because going back to his college tape, it's almost like he enjoys the contact.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. He likes to feel where the defender is at when he goes up and gets that ball. So again, I think you're right. Schematically, they'll figure out a way to get him open. But that being said, one of his best skills is the fact that he can go downfield and win that ball. I just don't know if Alex Smith is going to throw him that ball.
It's worth noting, too, for Alex Smith and tight window passing. Like, yeah, he obviously does not throw many tight window passes. But when he did last year, and this is mostly last year, but again, I think you can look at it for his entire career. He was great when he was okay. asked to do it. So,
right,
like Tyreek Hill, a great passer rating in tight windows. Alex Smith actually sixth among quarterbacks with over 175 attempts with tight window passer rating.
All right, we'll move on. The last note I'll give regarding Kirk Cousins, we talked about Denver extensively, Arizona obviously in the mix, but the Jets are a little bit of a dark horse here because Jerome Bates is the new OC in New York. Was the quarterback's coach under Mike Shanahan for the 2008 Broncos. Cousins recognized the Shanny coaching tree there and said the Bates hire was a smart move. So he
ooh,
was a little bit
tea leaves there.
A little bit, you know, a little bit. So a little bit of a dark horse candidate are the New York Jets for the services of Kirk Cousins. All right, let's talk
and
about
I just want to say one parting shot with
yes.
this trade, and it's no insight, but I just feel it needs to be said. Like, I know RG3 had himself. He brought the little spotlight back on himself when this happened.
Come on, with his joke tweet.
Well, he said something about like they'll find a way to blame this on me.
Robert, believe me.
Or whatever. But I gotta say, the first response I saw to that was like, you'll find a way to make this about you somehow. Believe me or whatever, which is a great response. But it just made me think like, wow, what like it's not even been it's. It's been, what, 6 years since they drafted him? And from there, his career has fallen apart.
There should be a football life about Robert Griffin III.
This whole
please.
Situation, going from when they drafted to Robert Griffin III to now Alex Smith will be opening the 2018 season as their starter. Like,
right.
They not only they whiffed on their franchise quarterback, the guy they drafted behind him that people like from the
in
moment
in the same draft.
Yes, from the moment Kirk Cousins took the preseason field, I remember people in Washington being like, "Well, maybe this guy's better than Robert Griffin III." So it turned out to be true.
Right.
And they still blew that situation up and now he's no longer there.
Matt, keep in mind that same year, I think was the year that Alex Smith got benched for Colin Kaepernick,
yes.
right?
Oh, is it?
It was the same year.
It's just
wow.
like
just wild.
Holy
wow.
holy hell, like do things change so quickly.
So quick.
Not just in the NFL, but particularly with the Washington
Redskins.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right, let's take a look at the Super Bowl very quickly here. Matt Franchise, we'll start with you. What is the matchup that you are really looking forward to?
Yeah, you have Philly RBs versus New England Front 7 down here. I'm just watching both these teams. All right, neither of these teams have like their one feature back. I mean, Deion Lewis gets most of the touches for New England, but I think they're going to work James White in like
oh,
they have
yeah.
in the postseason historically. I think Rex Burkhead, yes. I don't know, were
Burkhead.
They punishing Rex Burkhead in the last game because he's the one who ran into Tom Brady's hand? He only had like a couple snaps.
That's a great conspiracy theory.
But I mean, he's a playmaker. I think they have to get him involved,
Burkhead.
You know, in the passing game, stuff like that. And then, you know, Mike Gillisley, who knows if he's even going to be active.
I doubt it.
But I like that.
Did he make the trip to Minnesota?
Right. I saw something on RotoWorld about, like, how he was unsure of his own status for the game.
I doubt
but
it.
I like the fact that both of these teams are coming in with, like, super deep backfields.
Yeah.
And you don't know how they're going to attack. I think they're both going to be pretty conservative at first and probably do a lot of handoffs. You know, it's probably going to be
a feeling out process.
Punts back and forth and, you know – I have LeGarrette Blount in my playoff challenge lineup. I see people being like, why would you start Blount over Ajayi? Ajayi has like the third most rushing yards among running backs in the postseason so far. But I like Blount. I think we talked about the Blount revenge narrative.
Yeah.
I just think there's so many interesting storylines that could happen with these two backfields. And both teams have, you know, Philly has a good run D and New England not so much. But
yeah.
It's a revenge off between Deion Lewis and LeGarrette Blount, too.
Oh, right.
God.
Yeah. Right.
Deion Lewis
didn't play for
was
the
on the Eagles, but he didn't play a snap that
I
year.
Know.
Right.
Oh, my.
Someone asked him, right? They were like, what's your favorite memory or yeah. something? And he was like, not playing or something like that
yeah.
along those lines.
He
but
was still hurt about it, for sure.
Right. He's yeah. still hurt. But I like just both these backfields are so dynamic. I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I think Philadelphia has they've got a better backfield.
Yeah.
And they're going up against a worse rush defense. Meanwhile, Philadelphia's got literally the best rush defense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You figure Bill Belichick will find a way to get those guys involved because he always finds a way to get those guys involved.
Right.
It is an interesting matchup, though.
And you'd think the Patriots defense is going to want to stop the run game, so then the Eagles are forced to make Nick Foles make plays,
sure,
or mistakes.
Well, they've been trying to do that all year. I don't know if they've really been successful. And again, they've been maybe successful here in the postseason, mm-hmm, but a hell of a lot easier to stop a one-note offense like the Tennessee Titans, a one-note offense like the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah. This is going to be a versatile offense where it's like, oh, great, you want to pull up the linebackers? Cool, we'll just throw it right over the top.
Exactly.
So I don't know. It's an intriguing chess match, certainly, offense, defense, Bill Belichick versus Doug Peterson. But Matt Harmon, what matchup are you looking forward to the most come Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah, so I actually just filed a piece on this, the mismatches to watch for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
NFL.com/Harmon.
There it is.
True, there it is. So like when the Eagles have the ball, one thing I'm going to be able to watch for is Nelson Aguilar versus Eric Rowe. Our colleague Bucky Brooks talks about like finding where's Waldo for the opposing team, and like the guy that you can just find him and just attack him and exploit him. And that during the postseason has been Eric Rowe. He's been just dog walked up and down the field in the postseason. He's given up 15 targets, 10 catches when covering the slot. That's more than any other player in the playoffs. And I would like Nelson Aguilar to have a pretty big game. He's obviously the slot receiver for the Eagles. So,
and they use him.
USC wide receivers, am I right?
He caught 8 touchdowns from the slot, which was more than any other player this year. And then when the Patriots have the ball, I think, look, it's cliche to say, but Tom Brady under pressure, that's the thing to look out for. The Patriots per Pro Football Focus allowed 40 quarterback hits this year. That was the most in the NFL. And the Eagles are a great pass rushing defense. They have 4 players with over 20 pressures this year, which is pretty outrageous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
7 players clear 20 pressures this year. That's even more outrageous than the first thing I said.
Insane.
Yeah. But Brady has the best passer rating under pressure this year, 95.5. So I think it's going to be just big about them getting pressure with the front four. I mean, that's what the Giants did when they beat Brady.
I'd have to look at it again, but I think our next-gen team actually broke up the pressures too, though, right? Where if the pressures were coming from up the middle, what was Tom Brady's quarterback rating? And if the pressures came from the outside, what was Tom Brady's quarterback rating? If the pressure comes from the outside, Tom Brady just... Yeah. I mean, lights out, forget it. But if the pressure comes from the inside, as we've seen throughout his career, passer rating goes way down.
That's how the Giants beat him twice in the Super Bowl.
That's exactly
right.
It's
that interior pressure. Well, Brady's one of the best quarterbacks like of all time with his pocket movement, and it's easier to, when the pressure's coming around from the outside, to step up, to sidestep. But when you're 40 years old and you've got a Fletcher Cox bearing down at you right up the middle, it's a little harder to sidestep that or, you know, do the old Russell Wilson pirouette thing. So I think that's where you're right. That pressure is going to be much more difficult.
Yeah, and I think that's where the Eagles are going to have to win.
Harmon mentioned Eric Rowe, the cornerback for the Patriots. He started his career with the Eagles.
Oh, that's right.
He's the guy. I always will remember him as the guy on Thanksgiving Day that Calvin Johnson scored 3 touchdowns.
What a blast from the past.
because whoever the starting cornerback was that day got injured and pulled.
Here comes Eric Rowe.
And Eric Rowe came in. And then the Patriots went out and got him. And I was like, why?
Why did they do that?
This is such a classic Patriots move to get this guy who was just destroyed. But he can be.
I mean, in defense, there really weren't many people that could cover Calvin Johnson.
Right,
but if you're coming in on already a short week.
He was a rookie.
They're like, bro. Go cover
this dude.
Go cover Calvin Johnson.
Like, welcome
that's
to
not
the
cool.
NFL.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To both of your points there, PFF has Eric Rowe with a 43.6 grade, which is bad.
He's like the 106th rated cornerback.
And he is the 106th rated cornerback. 106th rated.
That's a lot. That's like a lot.
There's a lot of corners.
And that's pretty low.
Is he a starter? Like, is he going to play a lot of snaps?
Yeah, he's a starter for them. He's a starter for them.
Yeah.
That means he's not even the worst rated third cornerback in the entire league. Almost.
That's right. That's exactly right. 32 teams, 2 corners each. So that's 64.
If you go to a third.
He's at 106.
Yeah, and when you're talking about cornerbacks, like your third guy, your slot guy is a starter now, mm-hmm, how much 11 personnel is out there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So, yes, of all, if you're starting 3 corners, he's doesn't crack any star.
Somebody's dime guy is better.
Holy hell. That's
Chung's
not good.
Chung's a former Eagle as well, right?
Year of the Eagles, yeah.
And Danny Amendola was cut by the Eagles as well.
Oh, so much revenge.
So much revenge.
There's so much revenge.
There's so much revenge.
This is insane.
For my matchups, I'm looking at both of the tight end matchups because, the thing with the Patriots is always they try to take away what you're best at. And I think I've been wondering all week, like, are they going to try and stop the running game even though they're not that good at it, or are they going to take away Ertz, and because he's been such a crucial piece of that offense, a big chain mover, a big play threat, and a mismatch for that offense.
And Devin McCourty's so good.
Devin McCourty's very good. So, like, are they going to try and take away Ertz? Are they going to force Foles to beat them through the air and stop the running game? So, because I think Ertz could be a big difference maker in this matchup for the Eagles. Because he's so athletic, and, you know, you see him putting...
I am fascinated by that matchup as well, because I think Devin McCourty is good enough to actually erase Zach Ertz if they wanted to go straight man-to-man and just cover that, although they haven't really been playing that style of football. So I am interested in that matchup very much, because I do think Devin McCourty is good enough to legitimately completely take Zach Ertz out of this ball game. That being said, if they do that,
then that opens up Jeffrey. That opens up Aguilar. That opens up the screen game and stuff more. And then, of course, the big elephant in the room, the big Labrador Retriever that plays for the Patriots, Rob Gronkowski.
Yep.
How do you stop him? I mean, he's one of the most unstoppable players in the league at his position. Malcolm Jenkins is a phenomenal safety. Do they go him up?
Great safety.
Do they man him up? Do they do a bracket kind of thing like the Jags did and try and take him out that way? I mean, Jim Schwartz is a very good defensive coordinator, so how they control Gronk is going to be a big question for me too.
I think the one thing that I'm really worried about, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, is how do you defend against Danny Amendola? And I know that sounds a little crazy, but Jalen Mills to me has just been...
He's Waldo on the Eagles defense.
He has been bad.
Well, the good news there is that Jalen Mills is primarily their left cornerback, which I actually think, like, watch out for when Cooks and him match up, because Cooks has been so great at not only catching deep balls, he leads the league in deep ball receptions. He also leads the league in defensive pass interferences when on deep targets. So that's one to watch out for. But the Eagles have a great slot corner in Patrick Robinson, like the total veteran reclamation project that they took on. He's been great this year. He's given up a 59.1 passer rating when targeted against slot receivers, which is, of course, the best in the league. So I think they do have a guy that could help take away Danny Amendola in this one.
Well, that's
another one to watch.
Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. And, of course, we didn't even talk about Alshon Jeffrey versus Stephon Gilmore and or Butler there, but I think that's going to be another one where, again, if they wanted to, I think Gilmore's good enough if they played man, which, again, I know they don't necessarily play a lot of man, but Gilmore's good enough to basically take away Alshon Jeffrey. I think Butler's the kind of player where Alshon, I think, can exploit that matchup a little bit because of the size differential, but Gilmore's, man, he's a big physical guy, and I think that's a better matchup for the Patriots than if it's going to be Butler matched up against Alshon. But, again, that's another matchup that I'm looking forward to. And, again, anytime you get into the Super Bowl, man, you start taking a microscope to these matchups, man. You know what I mean?
It's got me a little more excited to watch it, honestly, talking about it right now.
100%.
For this morning. By the way, I think I'm going to take the Eagles.
Okay. So we got three guys. Wait, Chris, what was your pick?
Should we pick them?
I think he took Pats.
27-17 Pats.
Pats. Okay, so we got three on the Eagles. It's me, Gilhar, and Harmon. And we got two on the Patriots.
You guys are all taking the Eagles?
Dreamers.
Damn,
we're dreamers.
You're crazy.
Listen, this team can just send waves of diverse attacks.
Such a
diverse
deep
attacks
team.
At you on, such on offense
team.
And then on defense. I mean, like,
but Tom Brady's the GOAT.
They have guys in their front seven.
But he was bit by a dog in training camp.
How can you be the GOAT if you've been bit by a dog?
You can't. Question is, who's better, time or the Philadelphia Eagles? Because Tom's already beaten time.
Oh, wow.
So if the Eagles are better than time,
right,
then maybe they can beat Tom Brady.
Well, we're not on the danger zone right now.
Oh, I
put
see.
Put the whiteboard away.
Stop looking at the numbers.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Belichick and Brady have been to an equivalent of a half of regular season worth of Super Bowls. You know, they say their eighth Super Bowl. You know, that's put in that context, it's really hard to believe.
Gross.
That is
It is it's crazy.
Yeah, that is insane. All right, so let's close out your show with a round of Daily Daps.
Daily Daps.
Daps. Matt Franchise, we'll start with you. What you got?
So I'm going to Daily Daps the new Justin Timberlake, Chris Stapleton music video for Say Something. I don't know. Gelhar said he's seen it.
Okay.
But I watched it. If you have an opportunity to, like, stream it to your big screen TV or whatever you got at home, and, like,
gorgeous
turn the lights off and turn the sound up and make sure there's no distractions.
Okay.
It's six minutes and 22 seconds. I, like, needed a minute to recover after I watched it. I was like, oh, my God, hold on a second. I need to come back to earth.
Okay.
It was amazing. First of all, the song is really good. I think Chris Stapleton helped him write it.
Okay.
And second of all, the video is one take of them doing this. It's just a live take of the song.
Oh, really?
And
it's just gorgeous.
It's
building.
A one shot.
It's in like a yeah. It's one shot, and it's in like this old building that I don't know if it was a former hotel, but there's like these old elevators, and basically Justin Timberlake starts out on this like digital pad, like doing some beats, and then I'm like, what is he DJing? And then he starts singing, and he's mic'd up, and he's walking through this building the whole time, and he picks up his guitar, he gets on the elevator.
Spoiler alert.
And there are, well, it's amazing. You got to watch it.
It's really cool.
There's musicians all over the building, okay. And it's all a live recording. And then there's this chorus at the end. It's just, will give you chills. Like, it was unbelievable. You got to watch it.
Yeah.
Plus, JT's playing the Super Bowl halftime show.
I heard Stapleton's going to be making an appearance at the Super Bowl, too.
Hell yeah. That's
would
awesome.
Make total sense.
And Chris Stapleton, God, if you haven't ever listened to him before, he's incredible.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite musicians out there right now. I listened, I think, all three of his albums yesterday at work.
He's unbelievable. So watch that music video for Say Something. It's,
there you go.
It's awesome.
Gilhar, what you got?
I'm going to first daily dap the big Dota tournament like the past couple weeks. It's a game I always talk about in esports and stuff. And there was a really good series for the championship of the tournament at the International last year in August, which is the biggest one where there's like a $25 million prize pool. The team Liquid just wiped the floor with this other team, Newbie, and then those teams met again in this championship and went to a best of five series, and Newbie got revenge. Of course, their prize pool was much, much, much smaller, but it was a really good series.
There
so daps to them for winning. And also daily daps to this Quincy Jones article. I don't know if you guys have seen – I'm sure you guys have seen it going around, but GQ did a really lengthy interview with Quincy Jones, and the whole premise was basically Quincy Jones has a story about that from – I mean, he's 84 years old and has been running around with literally – all of these famous people from all different walks of life, and
right.
I only got about halfway through it yet last night before I wanted to fall asleep. But it was really interesting. And if you haven't, if you're interested at all in that or his music stories, running around with Sinatra and things like that, just check it out. It's very interesting. And he's 84 years old and claims that he's going to live to 120 or so. Scientists tell him
Scientists have told him.
Whoa. He spends 6 days a year at like some crazy Swedish like science lab and doing all this stuff. And he says that they think he can make it to 120. So
So Quincy Jones and Tom Brady are both fighting time.
Yes.
Right.
Wow. Well, right now, Quincy's got a big lead.
I was
going
to say,
full
Quincy's
circle.
Quincy's been leading.
Well, Tom Brady's NFL career, at least.
Well, I mean, again.
Different layers.
Again, Tom Brady has already beaten time. That's what I've been told.
I keep forgetting.
Yeah, is it over yet?
Exactly. I'm pretty sure. Well, that's what I was told, so I was.
Throw the damn towel.
He beat time.
The towel.
I think he's beat time, so time is whatever, and one, and that one is Tom Brady.
Well, right. All right, then.
Right.
But yeah, that article. I haven't read it yet, but I want to read it.
I will daily dap, I guess 24 years ago yesterday, the Wu-Tang Clan released Cream, which
nice.
Is a hip-hop anthem. And it reminded me of the fact that the very first piece of music I ever bought was a cassette tape of 36 Chambers, which was
cassette tapes.
Awesome.
Yes.
You know what I think the first one I ever purchased with my money was?
What was it?
Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes!
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
That's great.
I loved Weird Al when I was a kid.
Me too.
First of all, I know this is going to sound weird. I think he's a genius.
He is.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. No, dude, the dude's had a, like, what, 30-plus year career now with parody, and, like, he puts out an epic hit, like, once every couple years.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, he does it well. Like, it's not like, I mean, I get that it's corny or whatever, but still, it's still hits.
Oh,
yeah. He's,
you know?
He's rich as hell.
Yeah.
He's laughing all the way to the bank, baby.
His White and Nerdy was great that just came out, several years ago.
It's
and
great.
Then didn't he do a Blurred Lines parody?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm sure that would be great.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the first piece of music. What was the first piece of music you guys bought?
Mine, I think, was a Beach Boys cassette.
Cassette tape?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Producer Chris?
I think it was Snoop and Dre, Nothing But a G Thing. Single.
That was unexpected.
Nice. Single cassette. Yeah.
That was unexpected. Cassette tape, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why is that unexpected?
I don't know. Just seems unexpected.
Are you attacking him?
I think you're under attack, Chris. James.
Thursday attack. Thursday.
Well, first of all,
James
you
is the resident hip hop guy.
No, but you grew up in the East Coast, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I'm saying, like, they're obviously a West Coast.
So?
Yeah,
we could listen to Drake.
No, it's not that.
I
understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it mattered. I grew up Northern Virginia, you know. There's a lot of East Coast rap groups, but I think.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. The East Coast guys were bigger out East. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Dre and Snoop, though.
Okay. Matt Harmon, what was your first piece of music? Well, have you ever bought a cassette tape?
Yes.
Oh.
I think it's like Black Sabbath's first album.
Oh, hell yeah.
I bought
on nice. That tape. Nice.
First CD I bought, though.
Okay.
I think was actually a Good Charlotte album.
Oh,
damn. We were just talking about that.
How has Good Charlotte come up twice in the last 2 days?
I know. What an upset. You're in the year 2018. They've come up 2 days.
My first CD was Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. That's the first one I bought.
Good one.
I love that album.
That's my first.
That's actually a good album.
Yeah,
I think my first CD was the same one.
Is this the email you were trying to troll me about?
Was it?
Doggy Style, yeah. I think so.
I want everybody to know I'm under attack even as we're wrapping up this podcast.
What?
An email came through. Chris Long says, I drink 4 cups of coffee on game days, and Harmon's like, did you see that? Because they always make fun of me as if I'm the only one that drinks coffee out of us.
Well, I'm sure you're like, 4 cups of coffee on game
day?
That's
it?
Give me a break.
That's Come it?
On. You're playing a football game.
I didn't drink coffee on game days. It dehydrates the hell out of you.
True.
I drank coffee one time, like, in semi-close proximity to a soccer game, and it was, like, the worst soccer game I ever played in my life.
Oh, really?
I was like, well, yeah, because, I mean, you're running, like, 7-8 miles in the soccer game, and you – I had some coffee beforehand. I was like, this was a big mistake.
Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Oh, I still got a daily dap.
You do?
I want to daily dap the Vice article that we were reading.
The clap examination?
So,
yeah.
Whether you watch the State of the Union or not, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah.
But go and check out this Vice article. They did like a recap and grading of every, like most of the politicians, like
their
clapping.
Awkward clapping, yes.
And there's so many, like just, they have the GIFs or the video clips. Like some of them, the way they're clapping, it's so weird. And it's hilarious.
Who's clapping? Because also the rating, they describe it and then give a rating system on the number of claps for, you know.
Yeah, 5 for originality.
Four claps for anger. Melania Trump got like 5 claps for bravery and like all sorts of ones. But it's really funny. Who was your favorite clap that they highlight in there? I think mine's Ben Carson. Is it Ben Carson or Tim Kaine?
Ben Carson.
Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine
is
great because he's red face, looks drunk as hell.
He's like, hate clapping.
And his hands are like sideways.
Like his fingers aren't involved at all in the clap.
Oh, so it's just palms.
Just palm on
just
palm,
palms.
Just like
it's
mad
so
mashing. And Ben Carson's is like, I don't know. He looks like some sort of like cartoon character that's very giddy because his hands are like perfectly upright and close together.
Yeah, they're about
and it's like a
pitter patter. Like 2 inches apart.
It's,
that's pretty funny.
The article is hilarious.
It's hilarious. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter what you think of like politics or anything. It's worth it just for that. I would say those two are great. However, I mean,
that's hilarious.
Trump's is pretty funny too because
well,
like,
obviously.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, but like because they have they have the mic right up there, and he was like clapping for himself at some points, and it was
so
right into the mic, and it's so funny because I listened to like a podcast, like a political podcast.
I love that he claps for himself.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, whatever, of course. But
who does that? It's amazing.
I don't know. It's like me dapping myself.
BSP.
But,
BSP.
Oh God. But it's
presidential candidate Matt Harmon.
It was just really funny when I don't meet the age requirement, but it was just really funny when, like, because I listened to a podcast says that morning, like of them recapping the State of the Union, and the whole time I'm like, man, what is that annoying clap right into the mic? And I'm like, oh, it's Trump. But then the other one, and I'll save this for people to read it.
Yeah.
The Congressional Black Caucus's clap. That one's mine.
Okay.
Nice.
All right.
There you go. Produce Chris, what do you got? Close the show, baby.
You know, I'm going to dab James for getting that Therese Paylor.
Oh,
yeah, man. That's
big,
huge.
That's a big guy.
Yeah.
That guy broke the story a couple days ago. So dabs to you, brother. And then this is kind of a self-dab, but I did an interview with Ken Wisenhunt. It was a Super Bowl preview because the Chargers played the Eagles and the Patriots this year.
He that's right.
Was the coach of the Cardinals back in 2008 season.
Yeah, when they went to the
Super Bowl against the Steelers. So really good insight on Chargers Weekly. About 15-minute interview with him kind of breaking down the Eagles and Pats. I thought it was pretty
Chargers.com.
Nice.
Chargers.com or Chargers Weekly on iTunes.
There you go.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Do you want to break your news or do you want to break it next week?
Sure. I'll break some news.
Oh, I thought we were going to do this.
Let's do it next week.
Okay. All right, let's do it next
what
week.
What a tease.
You got to tune in next week for the franchise news.
A weekend cliffhanger.
Tune in after the Super Bowl when no one's going to care.
I think we save it for next week.
All right, we'll save it.
Okay. All right, we'll save it for next week. Wow, what a tease.
I don't know how to handle these things.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
I was trying to help you out as your publicist.
Thank you.
Oh, dude, we're gonna
forgot. You hired Harmon as your publicist?
That's a bad move. Yeah, all right, for Matt Harmon, Matt Franchise, Alex Gelhar, and Chris Havery, I'm James Coe. We'll see you later.
See you later.